This is WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, and Catskill, Green and Columbia Counties, New York. And this is Chad Weckler, and in the studio today, I have a special guest, Terry Lacona, a native of Poughkeepsie, but has left the state of New York to live in Austin, Texas. And Terry will share a little of his beginnings in Poughkeepsie, New York, and what's going on in Austin, Texas for him. So I will let Terry introduce himself and explain who he is and what he does.
Hi, Chad. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, it was a dark and stormy night back in I've been in Poughkeepsie probably at least a third of my life, and then I moved to Austin, Texas back in 1974, which in retrospect does seem like a long time ago. But I spent the first 24 years here growing up and going to college at the State University in Albany, and that's where I developed some interest in radio at the college radio station, and over time started working in commercial radio in Poughkeepsie at WEOK, and then the original WPDH, which I believe went on the air sometime around 1970. And on a whim or wild hair or whatever you want to call it, I decided to pack up and move to Texas. And it turned out to be a good move on my part, because for the past 34 years, I've been the producer of the public television music series Austin City Limits, which over time has become the longest running music series in American television history. So that's something we're very proud of. Show has been very successful over the years on PBS and seems to continue to not only survive but to thrive. It's turned into a music festival, it's turned into a full-time music venue, and of course the television show continues.
And what was the reason for you to move to Austin? What was the impetus?
Well, I had a friend of mine in Poughkeepsie who had a local band at the time. It was called the Arm Brothers, which was an interesting hybrid of acoustic bluegrass and electric rock, sort of with a country flavor. Dan Del Santo was his name. He was a native of Poughkeepsie also. And the two of us decided to go to Texas in the summer of 1974 to see Willie Nelson's 4th of July picnic. And we had heard about Willie Nelson, and we'd heard about the Austin music scene, and decided to go check it out for ourselves. So we drove down there in my car in the middle of summer and stayed for 3 days at Willie's picnic, which was quite an affair, especially in the blazing hot Texas summer sun. And then spent a couple of days just poking around in Austin, and both decided we wanted to live there. We wanted to move there. Dan was going to move his band, and I was going to move and hopefully find a job in radio in the Austin area and just see what happens.
What were you doing radio-wise in Poughkeepsie?
Well, okay, when I was still in college going to Albany State, I began working part-time at WEOK. And this is when I was like literally 19 or 20 years old, and I was what you'd call a utility man. I would fill in for everybody who was on vacation or sick. So I got to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. At the time, they had an easy listening radio format. I did local news. I would fill in for the Sunday morning gospel music host on those days when he had stayed up too late the night before and couldn't come into work. And, you know, I got to learn a lot about different kinds of music at the time, because when they began their FM radio station, and it was really primarily a simulcast of WEOK AM, but in the evening they programmed all kinds of music like in hour blocks. So for 1 hour they'd have folk music, for another hour they'd have blues, then for another hour they would just completely switch and have classical music, and then have Broadway show tunes, and then at the end of the night they would do this 1 hour show called The Grotto, which basically was anything goes in terms of format. So that's what I did, and it kind of paid my way through college, paid my tuition bills. And then I basically was one of the original FM DJs when WEOK FM changed its call letters to WPDH FM and became the first rock format FM radio station anywhere in the Hudson Valley. And it was a pretty radical thing at the time, because you have to remember that FM radio, this is back in 1970, 1971, FM radio was brand new. Before then, it was AM. And FM was kind of like today, you talk about HD radio or satellite radio. Well, back then, FM was the new radio. And it was so new that very few people had FM radios at first, and they couldn't sell commercials because sponsors figured nobody was listening. So we had the freedom, we had this blank slate to basically create a format and a radio station identity that before then didn't exist.
But did you choose your own music?
We had complete freedom, and that's something that certainly is rare in radio, commercial radio, at least today. Thank God for community-supported radio and public radio like NPR, because they still have that kind of freedom to experiment and offer an eclectic mixed bag of all different kinds of music. So, but when we started out, we even had to bring our own records in. So whenever I would come in to do my regular shift, I would literally bring boxes of records. And this was back in the day of vinyl, so they were not, you know, this is some heavy lifting. Boxes of records from my car into the station every time I came into work, so that I had some music to play, because the radio station itself did not really subscribe to rock music at the time, and radio or record labels were not, you know, sending out dozens of free demos to every fledgling FM radio station that existed. So we got to play a mixed bag of whatever kind of appealed to us, or whatever we thought the audience would listen to. And we'd get calls from people constantly. And usually when I would come in to work on night show, it was me and me. I would certainly, I'd play the music. I was the DJ. I'd answer the phones, answer the door, check the transmitter once every half hour, log in and do the official FCC thing. And, you know, basically I could play whatever I wanted to. And it was a great freedom to have at the time.
And when you moved to Austin, when you went to the PBS station there?
Oh, the NPR station. I originally looked for work at a commercial station and really didn't have much luck. So as fate would have it, I was hired on a part-time basis by the local NPR station, KUT-FM, at the University of Texas, which is where the UT part comes from. And I did a little bit of everything. I did some local news. I did an interview program, sort of like a Charlie Rose type of interview program on the radio. I did a bluegrass show every Saturday, and I did a late night jazz show. So since the NPR radio station happened to be located in the same building as the PBS station, I was exposed to an entirely different world that I had never, frankly, even thought about, let alone had any experience or any firsthand, you know, observation, namely television. I had never set foot in a television studio until this time. So, and strictly by coincidence, again, a lot of this has to do with being in the right place at the right time and a little bit of luck thrown in. When I moved to Austin, I was expecting to continue to work in radio. I didn't realize that literally 3 weeks before I had arrived in Austin, they had produced a pilot show for a new PBS music series called Austin City Limits. And the artist performing on that original pilot show was none other than Willie Nelson, who I had gone down there to see just a few months previously at the Willie's 4th of July picnic. So I had nothing to do with the creation of Austin City Limits. I don't pretend to claim any credit for coming up with the original idea or even the name, and had nothing to do with it for the first 2 years of its existence. But I happened to be there shortly after it was conceived and after that first show took place. And it was a very bare bones, skeleton kind of staff at the time, with really just very few people trying to figure out what they were doing. And so it was an opportunity for me to not only learn a little bit about TV, but to actually get my foot in the door. So I approached the original producers of Austin City Limits and volunteered to help out. I got to know them just from being in the same building, you know, when I would come into work on the radio. And, you know, they needed some help, so they were happy to kind of let me basically be a gopher. I was an assistant to the producers, I guess is the best way to describe what I did, whatever they needed me to do. But within a few months, I sort of learned the ropes about what they were doing and realized, for instance, that they could use a little extra help when it came to the talent bookings for the show. So I got more involved on that level in terms of what types of artists, bands, and so forth seemed to be a good fit for the program back in the early days. And what happened after 1 year of volunteering as an assistant to the producers, oddly enough, the original executive producer, the original producer, and the original director for Austin City Limits all left. They decided to move on to other, perhaps they thought, bigger and better things, because frankly, nobody thought that Austin City Limits was ever going to last or amount to much beyond maybe a couple of years, you know, it'd be a fun ride, and then it would just go away. So the producer moved to Dallas to go to work for the Dallas Independent School District. The director moved to Denver to become an Amway salesman. And the executive producer, I think he went into some sort of consulting business that he set up. So I kind of looked around and realized that there was this vacuum. And having been an assistant to the producers, all of them were gone. So I know an opportunity when I see one, and I walked into the door of the general manager's office at the PBS station, and basically I talked my way into the job, again with very little experience, like 1 year as a volunteer. But I think I was able to convince them for a couple of reasons. One, even the management of the PBS station at the time probably didn't really think that the show was going to last. They thought, oh, maybe another year. In fact, they weren't even necessarily that supportive of the show, because it was a kind of a Texas country music show, and there were certain people who felt that that was not appropriate for a public television station, which should be programming more educational types of programs, children's programs, public affairs, you know, that sort of thing. And this idea of, you know, Texas music just didn't quite seem to fit in some people's minds. So they may have thought that it was on its last legs, but they really didn't want to hire an expensive producer from LA or New York to come in and take over the reins for a show that they thought might not even last. So I basically talked my way into the job on the basis of the fact that I was cheaper and I was already there and they knew me, and they agreed to basically give me a shot at doing it. So the rest is history, I guess, as you say, because here I am 34 years later still doing the same thing that I did then. I may have the longest gig in show business. I don't know anybody else, I mean, seriously, who is still doing essentially the same exact job in the music / television business as I am and have been lucky enough to do and continue to enjoy doing after all these years.
How would you compare the first year that you were involved to, let's say, this year?
Well, in many ways, Austin City Limits has not changed even after 37 years. This is our 37th season on PBS. But of course, it has. It's changed in the sense that it is now produced in high-definition television as opposed to your standard TV. I mean, it's not like it was ever produced in black and white back in 1974. We did have color TV then, but interestingly, color television was still a relatively new, development at the time. But the essence of the show has always been to produce fresh, original, authentic music. Now, back in the day, back in the early day, it was basically Austin or Texas-based music with a little bit of a smattering of music from the Texas Gulf Coast on into Louisiana, but really nothing beyond that area. So the challenge when I became the producer in the fourth season was to try to grow the show beyond that. We had pretty much tapped out the best of the best of that music, those genres that were indigenous to that area. And in fact, the producers were even beginning to repeat some of the same acts two or even three times within 3 years. So I saw the show as having the potential to grow beyond its original roots. And in fact, one of the first acts that I booked in my first year as the producer was Tom Waits. Tom Waits had nothing whatsoever to do with Austin, with Texas music or the Gulf Coast. And it was about as far-fetched from, you know, Willie Nelson or George F. Walker or Sleep at the Wheel or some of the original Austin-based acts who performed on those early shows. But ironically, to this day, the Tom Waits show is still one of the shows that people ask about the most. It has never been released as a DVD, but so many people are aware of it or have seen it or have obtained copies of it, and it's been posted on YouTube from time to time, and we've had to take it down. But interestingly, now that I'm talking about the Tom Waits show, we are actually planning to repeat it as a special encore episode during the upcoming holiday season. In fact, there's a song in the middle of the Tom Waits show that is tangentially about Christmas Eve. Has to do with a hooker and a junkie and a few other, you know, dubious characters. And so we are repeating that show on Christmas Eve this year as Austin City Limits gesture towards Christmas. And it hasn't been broadcast in well over 15 years. So I think it's going to be something that a lot of people will look forward to. Vintage Tom Waits from 1978. I digress. Anyway, that was an example of the new direction that I tried to take the show in, partly out of necessity because I felt like we had to become more diversified. We couldn't just repeat the same acts over and over. But also because the show, it deserved to really expand what the original concept was. And there was an audience for more than just Austin and Texas music out there. And there really were very few other television music programs on the air at that time, other than your classic shows like Midnight Special, Don Kirshner's rock concerts, and the occasional network show that would feature pop music of the day. But Austin City Limits was something different from the beginning, and I think people recognize that.
Would you say that in the beginning, Austin City Limits was basically known for country music or Texas music, and you've since sort of changed that theme?
Right. Well, I think the reason the show has succeeded over the years is that it has evolved musically. You know, like I said, it started out as an Austin and Texas and a regional type of music show. Then we began to expand, and we even began to have legendary artists like Ray Charles, B.B. King, Roy Orbison, Johnny Cash, basically anybody from anywhere from any genre of music, as long as they fulfill the criteria that I have always had in my mind as the producer of the show and as the person who books the talent. And that criteria mainly is originality, somebody who has something original to say with their music, whether they're a singer or a guitar player or whatever instrument they might play, or if they're a songwriter. If they have a unique way of expressing their music, then that's the kind of person who I'm looking for. So, but over the years, we have shifted from Austin and Texas music to country music to roots music to today, where we basically have a more eclectic format and mix of music today than any other time in the history of the show. We have had hip-hop music on the show. We have jazz. We have blues. We have indie rock. We have a little bit of everything, really. Singer-songwriters, Americana. I think some of the most original and inventive music that's being made today is coming from the indie music community. And indie is a kind of a catch-all that could include almost anything. It could include an art rock band, or it could include somebody like Mumford & Sons or the Avett Brothers, who are part of this new, I'm not even sure what you would call it, modern folk rock sort of hybrid sound that seems to be really popular right now. It's mostly acoustic based, but it's a very high energy type of live performance, and the live performance is really probably the most appealing part of what they do. So, you know, the show today means all things to all people. And we try to feature a little something for everybody. In the course of a season, we may have a well-known country performer. Then we may have a hip hop artist or a jazz artist like an Esperanza Spalding. Or, for instance, this current year, the shows that we're currently producing, which have not even begun to air yet, although our new season is coming up in October, include people like Mumford & Sons, Flogging Molly, Arcade Fire, two big established rock bands like Coldplay, and modern soul and contemporary R&B like Raphael Sadiq. Some indie artist from England, Florence and the Machine, is one who comes to mind, to a legendary classic performer like Randy Newman, who I have been trying to get for 25 years. And as, again, fate would have it, I always say patience and persistence will pay off ultimately. And he's going to be in Texas in mid-September, so we seized the opportunity to invite him to come and tape a show, finally. And after all of these years, we got him.
And Austin City Limits has also changed venues recently. Can you explain that?
Well, sure. That's part of the growth of the show, which has kind of surprised us and surprised everybody, how this little public television music show that started in Austin in 1975 has today become not only the longest-running music show on TV, but it's spawned a very successful music festival, the Austin City Limits Music Festival, of course, which is now celebrating its 10th anniversary and become one of the top five music festivals in the country. But most recently, just this year, 2011, we have opened a brand new venue under the name Austin City Limits. We're actually calling it Austin City Limits Live, and it's also our new home. One of the great things about the original studio, which is on the University of Texas campus in Austin, was the fact that it is a recording studio, so the acoustics in that room were always phenomenal. There was never any better place to come and see live music than in that original studio, but the problem was that it was very small. It could only accommodate 300 people, and it was not designed or built to be a studio for a music show. So we had issues getting loading in and loading out band equipment, getting an audience in there, lack of bathroom facilities, for one thing. So it was not very accessible. And we always had this dream that if we could create a new facility, a brand new venue that would not only serve as the home of Austin City Limits, the TV show, but could become a live performance venue and operate 365 days out of the year, how great would that be? And as, again, fate would have it, we now have such a place. A developer in Austin, Stratus Properties, approached us about 5 or 6 years ago with, like they say, an offer that we couldn't refuse, namely that they would build this brand new facility under our name at no cost to us. It's a $40 million project. They built it. We paid for the television equipment, which seems fair enough. You know, we provided the cameras and the audio and video equipment. And now it's been open for about 6 months, and it's great. I think it may be the most beautiful live music venue anywhere in the country, and the only one that is combined with a state-of-the-art studio soundstage. And you've got to see it to believe it. Like I said, it's a big badass recording studio, basically, where 3,000 people can now come and enjoy a live show, whether or not we're taping it for Austin City Limits. And it also has the potential to tape a lot of other productions in there beyond Austin City Limits. And we've talked about what the opportunities might be, ranging from doing other types of music shows, perhaps a Latin music show, or even doing stand-up comedy. For a room as big as it is, like I said, it can accommodate 3,000 people in its maximum capacity configuration. It still has a very intimate feeling because of the way that we designed it. And I think as it becomes better known and more artists have had a chance to play there and more fans have had a chance to come and see shows there, they will begin to appreciate its uniqueness.
And how many episodes do you do each year for ACL?
Typically, we tape about 20 shows a year, and that's the way it's always been. And those 20 shows are edited into 13 individual episodes that are broadcast on PBS. Some of the episodes are full hours with the same artist or the same band, but at least half of the shows are split between two different acts. And that's also been a part of Austin City Limits' history and its tradition, which I think has set the show apart, is introducing new talent to the world. And we love the process of discovery, discovering a new singer, a new songwriter, a new musician, featuring them on our show for the first time. It's so hard for new talent to get any sort of national exposure on television today. And so we've always had a philosophy of dividing a lot of our shows between a headliner artist who is well known already and then some up-and-comer who may be just starting out their career.
And closing, what can we look forward to as listeners and viewers for ACL in the future?
Well, as I said, our 37th season on public television is about to begin in October and run through January. At the same time, you can now go online and visit the AustinCityLimits.com website. And that website will take you to either the TV show website, the ACL Festival website, or to the site for the new venue with information about all of those things. And you can actually watch full-length episodes of Austin City Limits online by going to our website, which is something that we never could do in the past. And, of course, being public television, our shows air at all different times on different stations all around the country. And, you know, especially younger people these days don't religiously follow the broadcast schedule of station XYZ. They watch what they want to watch or listen to what they want to listen to when they want to. So now they can go online, pick an Austin City Limits episode, if it's Arcade Fire or whomever, and be able to watch it on their computer, on their handheld device, or on their iPad. And beyond that, Chad, who knows? We have talked about the possibility of packaging tours under the Austin City Limits name. Perhaps 4 to 6 artists or bands who, you know, they have something in common genre-wise. It could be a touring package featuring indie rock bands or roots bands, artists, country, and then send these out under the Austin City Limits name in the summer for a few weeks and see how the response is. So we'd also love to see the shows distributed internationally, which they are not right now, which does surprise a lot of people, in countries where they would appreciate some of the music that we have on.
It does sound like persistence is the key.
Persistence, patience, passion, you know. Those words just happen to start with the P, but I think a lot of it does have to do with the passion that we all have. And when I say we, obviously there are many people behind the scenes who don't necessarily have a soapbox to stand on like I do, but the people who have worked hard on Austin City Limits, many of whom have been there even longer than me, are very proud of what they've done and still have a lot of fun doing it. And I think all of that shows in the end results with the final programs that people are able to watch on PBS or go online and enjoy.
Well, I want to thank you, Terry Lacona, for being here in the studio in Hudson, and you're having way too much fun, aren't you?
I am. All I can say is come to Texas, but try to avoid the summer.